here on the Head On Radio Network, and never, never forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, everybody.
President is warning that the deployment of an international peacekeeping force along its border with Lebanon would be seen as a hostile act. Meanwhile, Israel's foreign minister characterized the situation in Lebanon as being, quote, explosive. In the Gaza Strip, a video was released today by a previously unknown militant group showing the two Fox News journalists who were kidnapped from their vehicle in Gaza City more than a week ago. The written statement from the Holy Jihad Brigades criticized the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It demanded that Muslim prisoners in U.S. jails be released in exchange for the two men within 72 hours. In Washington, the United States and France say that Tehran's response to the Western package of incentives to halt its uranium enrichment program falls short of the conditions set. The Bush administration will consult with the UN Security Council members about possible sanctions on Iran. Iran offered counterproposals in its reply yesterday and is urging Europe to look at those positive signals closely. Russia and China are urging a negotiated solution to the nuclear standoff. In Amsterdam, a Northwest Airlines flight on the way to India returned to the airport with an F-16 fighter jet escort after suspicious activity on board was reported. 12 passengers have been arrested by Dutch police for questioning. In Baghdad today, a roadside bomb blast in a Sunni neighborhood killed two civilians and narrowly missed the Iraqi interior minister's convoy. In Mosul, a suicide bomber killed one person outside of a police headquarters. Also in Baghdad today, four survivors of a chemical weapons attack on a Kurdish village in the late 1980s testified at Saddam Hussein's second genocide trial. It has been adjourned until September. A New York Times CBS News poll shows that more Americans are viewing the war in Iraq as separate from the larger war on terror. 51% now say there is no link between the two. That's up 10 points from June. In Alaska, Republican Governor Frank Murkowski lost his re-election bid by finishing third in a three-way GOP primary. In Connecticut, Senator Joe Lieberman officially has more than enough signatures to run on the November ballot as an independent. And China and Russia plan to send a joint unmanned mission to Mars by 2009. Russia will provide the spacecraft. China will provide the equipment. You're listening to QNN.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Weyerhaeuser is combining its fine paper business with Canadian Domtar to create the largest fine paper company in North America. The deal is valued at $3.3 billion. The National Association of Realtors says that in July, sales of existing homes fell by 4.1%. That's the lowest level in 2.5 years, while the inventory of unsold homes reached a record high, the most in a decade. AT&T is suing to identify 25 data brokers who fraudulently posed as customers to get phone records of about 2,500 AT&T customers. Gateway Computer has received an unsolicited offer from eMachines to sell its retail operations for $450 million. Paramount Pictures is severing its 14-year relationship with Tom Cruise's film production company. The chairman of the movie studio says the actor's recent conduct has been unacceptable. Sony Pictures spent $65 million to purchase the online video sharing site Grouper Networks, and Microsoft announced it has entered a deal with Facebook to provide and sell advertising on the social network website. And the Wall Street Journal reports that Ford's chief executive recently spoke with the head of Nissan and Renault about a possible alliance. Light sweet crude settled at $71.68 today, and on Wall Street, the Dow is down 42 points, the Nasdaq down 15. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramov.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me strike. Today's Tom Sawyer, me try.
Right, it's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Bruce Birch Radio Program, radio for a freer America here in the United States of America. United States of America. It's about 8 minutes past the hour. It gets started a little bit late on the top of the hour there. It was a little bit of a kerfluffle my producer and I were dealing with, but we're here. Glad to be here with you. Now, I've got a number of stories. Today is the Wednesday Potpourri Show. Now, you won't hear a conservative talk show host say the word potpourri, but let me tell you, I have not only the ability, but I'm not ashamed to say the word potpourri. Why? Because I'm secure in my masculinity. I'm secure in the fact that you can be a liberal and enjoy the finer things in life, such as potpourri. Now, moving away from that and toward the general announcement mode, if you want to get in on the radio program today, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. B-U-R-C-H is the last name, bruce@brucebirch.com. Now, I've also, if you want to get in on the entire online experience of the Head On Radio Network, you can come into our chat room at headonradionetwork.com. There's a few folks in there hanging out, having a good afternoon. And looks like a lot of people hanging out there. Yes, my good friend Sarge is asking me if potpourri is a dirty word. Well, I bet you won't hear Michael Savage say it. I've got more chutzpah than he does, because this is what Michael Savage does. This is what Michael, you ready? I hate everybody. That's Michael Savage. Okay. Interesting story. Now we're just going to get right into the meat of the program today. We got a lot of different stories. The Wednesday Potpourri Show. If you've never heard the Wednesday Potpourri Show, basically the show is where I go through it, I plow through as many stories as I can dig up, give a little commentary on them, take your phone calls, but, you know, I just move forward. The show is just pretty much, it, you know, there's really no set topic besides what comes across my plate. And actually today I've got, I've got a stack of stuff that's sitting over here. You wanna hear some paper? Here's a there. There's the stack. But we're gonna start off the show today with a story right out of my home state of North Kakilaki, North Carolina. And you know, if you have a comment on any of these stories, you can give me a ring. We can talk about it. Today, a pair of North Carolina towns are weighing whether to join dozens of other cities around the country, proposing to make English the official language in their communities. Mint Hill, which is in Mecklenburg County, that's where Charlotte is, and Landis, a town in Rowan County, which is where Salisbury, North Carolina is, for those of you who are familiar with North Carolina, are reviewing possibly making very clear that English is the dominant language. In Mint Hill, the proposal would also punish businesses that employ, rent to, or provide goods and social services to illegal immigrants, to undocumented immigrants. A proposal in Landis would require that all written or spoken government business must be in English, even if it means people bring their own interpreter. Municipalities across the country are moving at a time they feel Washington is doing little to address illegal immigration. Most cities are modeling their ordinances after the one approved July 14th in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, which is now facing a federal lawsuit. Hazleton's ordinance would fine landlords $1,000 a day and revoke business licenses, among other things. Landis, North Carolina Alderman James Furr, said he drafted the proposal he hopes will make a statement after hearing a congressman say that nothing would be accomplished at the federal level. And here's a quote from our good friend James Furr. Quote, I rode down Cannon Boulevard and could only read half the signs that were up, and that's when I really started thinking about it. I've always had concerns as far as bilingualism in government. I'm sure you have. I'm sure you woke up every day of your adolescent life and thought to yourself, damn those other language speaker people. He probably got upset because he had to take Spanish in high school, and so there. This is his way of getting back. Now, he doesn't believe his proposal is discriminatory. He thinks it's actually a welcoming proposal. He said, quote, racism is exclusion. This is welcoming you to our society. I'm laughing because, like, you know, it's the justification, the rationalization that these people, oh my God, they put forward, and then they turn to see, you know, look, the reality is that, and we've discussed this ad nauseum on this program, way back in February, March, April, May, when all of the immigration rallies were happening, I'm sorry, not on this particular program, but on my other show that preceded this one, when all the immigrant rallies were happening around the United States, you know, a lot of people were polarized, and it looks like to me that those feel like they have to have rules, have to have those rules, those policies. We can't just be a self-governing society. We have to have rules. Can't have chaos. Have decided that what they're going to do is force these undocumented immigrants and documented immigrants underground. The common myth, ladies and gentlemen, the common myth is that because someone speaks Spanish, obviously they have to be an illegal immigrant. Well, that's a huge myth. Huge myth. Speaking English is not a condition of entering the United States. Nor is it a condition of being a citizen here. And I dare say that these lawsuits are going to get thrown out. I hope they do. If you have thoughts on this, give me a call. 877-443-2366 is the number. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com, or join us in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. I'm going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll take a look at some other stories here on the Wednesday Potpourri Show. This is the Bruce Birch radio program.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or a printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 19 minutes past the hour, and we got the phone bank is just lit up like a Christmas tree. So let's go ahead and straight over to our free speech phone lines at 1-877-443-2366. Our good friend Jim is joining us. Jim, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hola, ¿qué tal?
Hola, ¿qué tal, my friend?
Cherubano Motorola.
Some rotini for you, too, my friend.
El Presidente Hupo Los Dos Equis.
Now, just because I did a bilingual story doesn't mean that I'm bilingual, okay?
Well, that's okay. But if you're using potpourri, you better watch out. You might catch something. I'm a sandalwood man myself. But I want to tell you about a story that happened here today on the radio. Bruce?
Jim, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm sorry. I said what was on your mind?
Oh, well, basically, on the morning talk show locally around here, this idiot who runs it was talking about a Fox News survey saying that the conservatives would eventually overwhelm the liberals because of the liberals' position on things like birth control, abortion, and gay rights. And therefore, the red states would overpopulate the blue states, and their victory would be assured.
Huh.
And the guy who called in to tell him was this guy named David, who talked like this, you know.
Oh,
and
really?
He was just too precious.
He was too precious.
I mean, it was like Dr. Fagu. I mean, good Lord. And this guy teaches school, and I don't know what he teaches, but I'll tell you one thing. He and that thing that was kind of, that came back from Thailand ought to have been in coach together, sipping champagne and painting each other's nails.
Are you trying to say you think he was gay?
Bruce, this guy, I don't know. He is so far out of that atmosphere, that word wouldn't even begin to describe it.
Okay, so more of a queen.
I don't know. He said he's straight, and that's fine, and that's okay. I'm not getting in there, and I'm not labeling people. But, I mean, to hear this voice discussing all these things and condemning all these people, it was just kind of mind-blowing to me. And
well,
I think some of the other listeners around this area probably heard it, and, you know, we were just guffawing about it, honest to God. But you may as well just fold your tent and steal into the desert sands, because you're going to be overpopulated by all the conservative people who don't believe in abortion and who hate them their queers or choirs, as they're called up here.
Choirs. They call them choirs. I thought that was what you sung in when you were in church, a choir.
Essentially, yeah. But, I mean, you know, when ignorance like that is displayed, I mean, I don't see any point in giving them a pass. Do you?
No. Nope.
I mean, just let them have it full barrel and just make fun of them. Normally, I try not to do that. But when I heard that, I thought, this is just nuts. And it was.
Was he a West Virginia boy, or was he an interview?
No,
what was
local?
The deal?
He was local, and up here I wish English was the first language.
I'm not going to touch that one, Jim. I'm not touching it.
Well, I mean, I wish you could. I wish the stream was up and you could listen to WWNR, because between 9 and 11. You know, you hear this guy named Steve O'Brien. I'm just going to point him out. And O'Brien is a unit of nonsense. It's how much nonsense you can utter in 5 minutes. And one O'Brien is equal to 10 Bushes. So we got to, you know, we're going to have to go.
He's a real bright bulb, huh?
But just a village idiot. Honest
right.
to God. You try to be tolerant, and you try to, you know, say, okay, you know, but you hear stuff like this, it just kind of, I don't know, the old gag reflex goes into effect. But I thought I might share that little vignette with you on your potpourri today and get
your
potpourri pot cooking, and who knows what kind of smells will come out.
That's right. Stick it in your smoke and pipe it. Is that the way, or the other way? Yeah.
You know, hey, listen, you're Jesse, that? You're robbing this trade, not me. I'm sure you've heard that old tire joke before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, well, listen, I'm going to get off here before I get arrested. So you have a nice program.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Jim. Glad to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's our good friend Jim calling from an undisclosed location somewhere in the wilds of the mountainous region west of Virginia. Very quickly, or let's see. You know what? Let's before we do any more calls, I want to get one little story in, and then we'll get then we'll take a quick break and take the rest of the calls. I want to try to. I hate to cut somebody off. I hate to give someone like a 3-minute segment to get their point in because this is conversation radio, isn't it? At least that's what we're calling it. And we're trying to hold very dear to that. Now, let me tell you about a little story here very quickly. There is a very interesting article out of Common Dreams today called Democracy in the Workplace. Okay? Now, if you're thinking democracy in the workplace, chances are you're probably thinking about unions. Well, this article is a different article, and it's the kind of article that the article basically talks about businesses operating with an open book transparency, if you will, so that the employees know what the financial condition of the company is. They know what the kind of business is the business the company is doing. They know what kind of investments the company is making, and so it's not this closed, greedy model. It's a political democracy within the workplace. However, it's not about in nowhere in this article. And I challenge you to go take a look at it there while I'm on my break. Because there's nothing in here that leads me to believe. See, it's saying to business, we'll trust you to do the right thing. Well, companies in this governmental system, in this economic system that we live in, if left to their own devices, eventually, look at profit as the bottom line. They have to in order to stay in business. In a capitalist society. But who looks out for the worker then? The company, it has to look after its own best interest, right? Well, yeah. Well, who's going to look after the worker's best interest? And I dare say that even a company that operates with complete transparency, as Tracy Fenton, who is a founder and CEO of World Blue Inc., a business design studio specializing in organizational democracy, even in the most ideal utopian situation with business, the bottom line is that if they don't make any money, they're going to go broke. That's their bottom line. And the bottom line for the worker is, how can they make, how can they force the company to pay them a living wage while not breaking the company's bank and while allowing the company to make a decent profit? I'm not talking about making people rich here. And that's the question with unionization. That's the question with this article. I do challenge you to go read it. It brings a different paradigm into the workplace that has not yet been seen. And basically, it's about the company, the corporate structure, being open for all people to participate. It's an interesting read. I challenge you to go read it. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get right back to your phone calls. I know I got a couple of you waiting online. Just hang on. I'll get to you here right after this break. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network.
Fire. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. With Bush insisting on staying put in the quicksand of Iraq and even preparing for another war against Iran, the logical question is, where is he going to get the troops? One answer came on Tuesday when the Marines announced that inactive members of the individual ready reserve may be called up for duty, involuntary duty. Now that'll be a nice call to get for any Marine who's already served time in Iraq. Pack your bags, you're going back. According to the New York Times, there are 59,000 such Marines, and Bush signed an authorization last month to grab 2,500 of them at a time. Just a few months ago, Bush's commanders were making lavish promises to significantly draw down the number of U.S. troops in Iraq from the 130,000 level. And according to the original Pentagon plan, we were supposed to have only 30,000 troops in Iraq by November. November of 2003, that is. Now, almost 3 years later, 2,600 deaths of U.S. soldiers later, 19,000 U.S. injuries later, Bush keeps sending in more troops to patrol the burgeoning civil war and the heightened insurgency. This is the very definition of quagmire in Iraq. Call it Iraqmire. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 34 minutes, getting close to 34 minutes past the hour. Glad to be back on with you again this afternoon. Wonderful afternoon up here in sunny North Carolina. Interesting little story about the immigration thing. I just, you know, again, people are going to try to limit and keep people from being, you know, a part of society. You know, putting a law in place that forces you to go to jail if you're, you know, found to be renting an apartment. It's crazy. It's crazy. They're losing their minds. And you know what? The Democrats always end up having to pick up the pieces, sweep up the mess, put things back in order, and then the Republicans come along again and tear it all down. Let's head over to our good friend Gene from Oregon. Gene, how are you doing this afternoon, my friend?
Oh, not bad, Bruce. How are you?
I'm doing great, man, doing great. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too. I had a real quick story for you. I was talking to a friend of mine. It was
okay.
A physical therapist, and he happens to be a conservative. I'm trying to work on him, but anyway, he was kind of bitching about how when he has a Hispanic-only speaking client, he has to provide a translator for them through his business.
Okay.
And he does this under the auspices of the ADA, because apparently speaking, the way he explained it, speaking a non-English speaker is considered a person with a disability, believe it or not.
Really?
Which I thought was kind of interesting. So I thought it was weird, actually, but I wouldn't call
yeah,
it
I've never heard that.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that a disability, but that's what he said. So I just was wondering, because all these rules and everything, it's kind of a, it might be a left-handed assault on the ADA, as well as an affront to people who just speak Spanish.
Right. Well, there's a lot of anger out there. People, I mean, I know, like, here in North Carolina, for instance, and I can't speak for Oregon because I don't live there, but
yeah.
Here in North Carolina, for instance, there's a city called Siler City.
Mm-hmm.
And I reported there, gosh, it's probably been, well, it was May 1st. It was May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge demonstration down there. There's 7,000 people in the town. 8,000 people showed up for this immigration rally.
Wow.
Okay. Okay, and that, of course, they were from farms all around the area there, and the problem is that in this town, or the problem as the people who are living there in the town see it, is that these newcomers, these immigrants, have come in and taken over the town. There are actually more immigrants that live in that town now. They make up, I think, something like 60% of the population there.
Yeah.
So they've actually outnumbered the original white aristocracy members of the town, who are now upset because they go downtown and they, you know, instead of seeing, you know, Peggy's Mini Mart or, you know, the Maxi Lunch or whatever it is, they're they're seeing all these tiendas and taquerias and Mexican restaurants, etc. And it's like their culture. They feel like their culture is under attack.
Well, if their culture meant that much to them, why didn't they, you know, go after the employers that imported the people in the first place? That's my
a very good point.
And so I mean, you can't take anything for granted in this world. In which they always seem to like to tell us, you know, personal responsibility on it, Jazz. Let's see a little bit. So, anyway, that's my point.
Yeah, I think this whole situation is a long way from having any kind of solution, and it's a long way from having any kind of rectifying. You know, the bottom line here is that as long as there are people that look different from you or me, mm-hmm. as long as there are people who speak different than you or me, as long as there are people who live in a different land, you know, there's always going to be fear. I mean, you know, people are going to come that, you know, and to be honest with you, Gene, based on what I've read and what I've seen, many Republicans and those who believe in authoritarian type of government operate from a place of fear.
Yeah.
First, they operate from a place of that fear, and so what happens is, you know, they automatically assume that these people are, number one, going to take over their town. They're going to rape, you know, who knows what they're going to do, you know, but they look at them with disdain. I remember going to this immigration rally that day, okay, and I was there recording and also volunteering, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Went on the way out of town, my wife and I, who happens to be half Hispanic, she's Puerto Rican and Irish,
mm-hmm.
we stopped at a barbecue restaurant to have dinner. Well, we went in and it was all white, all whites in the diner there. And you know, my wife looks. I mean, she looks Caucasian. I mean, you really can't tell that she's got Hispanic because I guess the Irish overpowered. I don't know. Anyway, point being is that you would not know if you didn't talk to her that she was Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
She was Puerto Rican. And we sat down, we had dinner, and we were listening to what these people were saying about the immigration rally that was at that point was still going on downtown. And I mean, I was ashamed. I was how can I put it? Dismayed, disappointed with the reaction that these people were having, because you know, in a nation, you know, we call ourselves the great melting pot, and the reality is it's something completely, you know, we're not.
Yeah, unfortunately.
You know,
yeah.
And all that wonderful claptrap that they taught you in high school about the great melting pot and a nation of immigrants. Well, you know, that can it's like, oh yeah, as long as we only let five in a year.
Yeah, or they're all from Northern Europe or something like that.
Or what? Yeah, and you know, and that's, you know. So I, yes, these, there's a lot of people who have run over the borders and who have showed up here with pretty much blatant disregard for the established policy on how to get into the United States. But on the same token, if that policy were equitable and if that policy were a realistic policy, they would probably, more than likely, you know, the majority of them would do it the right way, I believe.
Yeah, and besides, you never know what, the way the jobs are going. Those same people that complain about, you know, the immigration here will soon be, might be soon immigrants themselves. So what goes around comes around.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, and the reality is that exactly what you said, karma happens.
Yeah.
So, but I do appreciate your call today, Gene.
You take it easy.
I certainly will, and you too. Gene, ladies and gentlemen, Gene is our famous news ninja news blogger at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. You're doing a great job, man, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that's our good friend Gene. So, Gene, thanks for joining us. Now, we're, you know, it's kind of interesting, that story. Now, I'll have to look that up and find out whether or not a person's inability to speak a language would fall under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act guidelines. That's an interesting, I never have thought about that, but I suppose that might be, you know, I'll just have to look it up and see. Now, let's go straight, we're not going to take we'll take a late break. Let's go straight over to our good friend Sarge. Sarge is joining us from down south a little ways. Sarge, how you doing, my friend?
Well, right now we're having a heck of a thunderstorm coming through here.
Uh-oh.
If you can't hear me,
better get down off that pole. You better climb down from that pole, man.
Hey, you know, after Katrina, these things get scary. But
I bet they do.
We might have to recover from it. Whew, you don't want to recover from anything with this administration, believe me.
No, they certainly don't. I mean, the one thing that they pretty much do have down pat is how to completely bureaucraticize everything that it touches.
Yeah,
you know.
I'll tell you how bad it is. There's a woman in Jackson County that she filed paperwork with FEMA right after Katrina, and she hadn't heard from them. And just this weekend, she heard. She called and they told her, said, well, you put your P.O. box number down, but you didn't put post office box. So, you know, we just held your paperwork.
So, okay, that's just insane.
You know, I mean, duh.
That's just insane.
You know.
I was, Sarge, while I got you on the phone, I've been watching this HBO documentary that Spike Lee did on Hurricane Katrina. And I got to tell you now, you guys are living this every day. Every day down there, and I cannot imagine the kind of, I mean, you know, PTSD doesn't even begin to touch the stress level I bet you guys have. I mean, what are people doing down there still here almost a year later, you know, 7 or 8 or 6 days from now, a year later? What are people doing to, you know, to deal with the frustration, deal with the anger, and deal with all the, you know, the stuff that's the cursory stuff that happens as a part of dealing with a recovery effort like this?
Well, sadly, a lot of them's committing suicide. In Jackson County, like I've said before, we had 9 teenagers, not including the month of August, that committed suicide. That's in Jackson County alone, which is a small county.
Jackson County is located, just for folks who aren't aware, Jackson County is located where in Mississippi?
That's the county closest to Alabama on the Mississippi coast. Pascagoula is the county seat.
Okay, so that's right down, right on the coast then.
That's where Trent Lott's from.
Okay.
And okay.
I just wanted that clarification.
Yeah, but it's the people are just depressed. We've had a lot of suicide attempts. Fortunately, a good number of them have been intervened with, but the funds aren't there, and we're going to have a website up short on the 29th, ironically enough, where people can donate to help get more mental health counselors out in the field and get people more help, because organizations that are on ground, they're running out of funds because there's so much work to do. And FEMA and Haley Barbour and them have just totally neglected a lot of the duties. So it's just a tragic situation. The electricity bills have tripled. The cost of living has come close to tripling, if not.
Why is it up so high?
Well, see, now Bush put a limit on what is considered price gouging, and he said it like three times what it normally would be. So you can go up to three times the level and still be within the law.
So basically what he did was he set a law in place and then told people, okay, and it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
That if they could charge whatever they wanted to as long as it didn't go over that, and so they're charging. Now, electricity itself, though, that's more of a – do you guys have – I mean, what's the power company down there?
Well, it goes to the Southern Company, Mississippi Power and Light, and Mississippi Power Company now. But, of course, they're owned by the Southern Company, which has a big lobbying group in D.C., and they are one of Bush's high contributors. So, you know, we get
cronyism knows no bounds.
We get the shaft regardless. We don't even get the gold, you know. But.
Now, Sarge, do you live there in Jackson County?
No, my twin sister lives in Jackson County, and I did live there, but I moved back to our hometown of Columbia, which is in Marion, about 85 miles from Gulfport. So I'm a few counties. Let's see, there's Pearl River between us and Hancock. And Hancock, of course, is the one closest to New Orleans. So I got hit by it really bad, and, you know, I was without electricity for 2 weeks up here and called in and talked to Mike Malloy in the dark. And Mike,
I remember.
Mike was good enough. He put me on hold for the whole show and got me toward the end of the show so I could hear the whole show.
And, well, I remember that. I don't remember that it was you, but I remember a guy down there that was...
That was me.
that was riding me. Out the...
And I was I was so depressed because I'd been running around for a week trying to get news, and nobody would... You couldn't get a newspaper in or anything, and I didn't know a thing of what was going on. And I knew if I called Mike, he'd let me know. And sure enough, he did. But you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, you was talking about the language thing, the requiring to speak English. You know, that's going to really kind of make all of us non-citizens because we don't really speak English here. We speak
American. We don't, do we? We speak bastardized English, right?
Yeah. So we don't speak English. So what we're going to do? We got to leave.
They're going to have to fine us $1,000 for living in our homes. And I mean, no, it is crazy though. I mean, it's a nonsensical law that has no point aside from making people feel uncomfortable. And
well, you know, when I was in Germany, I spent 2 years over there, and the Germans they would go out of their way to try and speak English to you, you know. And I'd try to speak German to them, and, of course, I didn't know but a few words. And like I told my landlord one time, I said, "Ich habe die Miete," which means I have the rent. And he looked at me, and he said, "Oh, so you have the rent, huh?" So I learned for nothing. But you know, it's stupid because... what it shows is I don't want to learn. I don't want to know what you think. I don't want to be a part of what you are. So to hell with you. And you don't win friends and influence people like that. And if Americans want to have that attitude, as fast as we're going to fall if we continue on the pace we're going, because five times we've raised the debt ceiling, we can't continue to do this and not fall and get to the point where we need someone to come to our rescue. And if we isolate people like we're doing, who's going to rescue us?
Yeah, I know. It is absolutely.
Well,
you know,
Bruce, I'm going to let you go because you got other callers. Nice talking to you, buddy, and see you tonight in our chat room.
All right, man. Sarge, the Sarge is from powersandmorrison.com, and you guys are doing a wonderful job over there, man. I really appreciate all that you're doing to help support us, too, man. So have a great day. And we, yeah, you can go to Powers and Morrison, Powers, and as in special powers, powersandmorrison.com. And they have a chat room over there, and they hang out there and listen to Mike Malloy and talk about all kinds of stuff. You know, they were talking last night about possible contenders for the presidency in 08, and just little stuff like that. But, yeah, go check them out. Go check them out. And they do definitely support the programming here on the Horn. We're going to go ahead and take our break a little bit late, and then when we come back, we'll wrap up this hour. You listen to the Bruce Birch Radio Program, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's 5 minutes till the top of the hour, and we had to take a late break there because I ran over with the phone call. What can I say? Yesterday, I reported that Bush is going to call up 2,500 inactive members of the Marines. Today, the VoteVets.org group warned ABC News that the call-up showed a lack of plans for victory in Iraq and the problems faced by an overburdened American military. John Saltz, who is a spokesman and heads up the group, served as a captain in the Army in the Iraq War and is still a member of the reserves. He is quoted as saying, "The Pentagon has been saying it's meeting retention goals, but its actions speak louder than words." For President Bush, he says, there is a simple choice. Quote, "They have to decide between drafting people and cutting and running, because either way they have a big problem. 130,000 was never enough, but you cannot sustain force levels where they are. Those are their options." Of course, the Bush administration has repeatedly claimed that it is in favor of retaining an all-volunteer military force. And Saltz, for his part, says that in the short term, he believes they'll stand by that position. He goes on to say, "What it really tells you is that the Bush administration is not dedicated to democratization. They will cut and run because the political liabilities of having a state that is Iran's proxy aren't as bad as losing political power in the midterm election." He added, doing a draft would cause that. VoteVets.org works to place Iraq and Afghanistan veterans in government. While it does not consider party affiliation in its endorsements of candidates, all five candidates it has endorsed are running for office as Democrats. So, yes, this group of veterans says they feel a draft. They feel a draft. And you know what? This is not surprising, though. This has been on the back burner and has been one of those situations that we've been talking about and we've been looking at ever since the invasion. He went in there with way under the number of troops he should have had. And so they have maintained a certain level of chaos ever since they went into that country. As if to say that having manageable chaos is better than complete security. Well, I don't think so. And I think, quite honestly, that managed chaos, quite honestly, it pays off dividends for those people who are in the post-war construction business, like Dick Cheney, Halliburton, Kellogg Brown and Root, all of those guys. You know, it pays off big business to blow up a temple, build it back, and then blow it up, and then build it back. You can really siphon off a lot of American tax dollars by doing that. So, yeah, there may be a draft coming, and especially if the resident decider, this guy that we're calling the president, even though I don't know that I buy that he's legitimately a president. The reality is that if he decides to invade Iran, there will be no choice but to implement a draft. They just don't have the resources, and all of the military folks are saying that at this point. So, you know, be careful. Be very careful. Put a Democrat in the House this fall if you can, because we need to boot this one out. He's got to go. You listen to the Bruce Birch radio program. We're going to take a break for the news, and then when we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls, look at some more stories, and get on with the rest of the show. I'll be right back after these messages.
Thank you.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, the United States and France say that Tehran's response to the Western package of incentives to halt its uranium enrichment program falls short of the conditions set. The Bush administration will consult with the UN Security Council members about possible sanctions on Iran. In the Gaza Strip, a video was released today by a previously unknown militant group showing the two Fox News journalists who were kidnapped from their vehicle in Gaza City August 14th. It demanded that Muslim prisoners in U.S. jails be released in exchange for the two men within 72 hours. In South Lebanon, as the UN ceasefire is in its 10th day, Syria's president is warning that the deployment of an international peacekeeping force along its border with Lebanon would be seen as a hostile act. Three Lebanese soldiers were killed as they were defusing a missile. A landmine in South Lebanon killed an Israeli soldier. In Amsterdam, a Northwest Airlines flight on its way to India returned to the airport with an F-16 fighter jet escort after suspicious passenger activity on board involving cell phones was reported. 12 passengers had been arrested by Dutch police for questioning. In Iraq, a top U.S. military official says there is evidence that Iran is contributing to the instability in Iraq by training, funding, and arming Shiite extremists. He also said Iran is providing the technology for the improvised explosive devices, which are responsible for frequent roadside bombings. In Baghdad today, four survivors of a chemical weapons attack on a Kurdish village in the late 1980s testified at Saddam Hussein's second genocide trial. It has been adjourned until September. A New York Times CBS News poll shows that more Americans, 51%, now view the war in Iraq as separate from the larger war on terror. Also, 53% responded that it was a mistake to go to war, and 62% see the effort to bring stability to Iraq as going badly. In Charleston, South Carolina, a report released by the Citadel, the formerly all-male military college, states that about one in five female cadets reported being sexually assaulted at the school. Additionally, 68% of female cadets were sexually harassed, while 17% of male cadets said they were. In the eastern Atlantic, forecasters say Tropical Storm Debbie is strengthening. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The National Association of Realtors says that in July, sales of existing homes fell by 4.1%. That's the lowest level in 2.5 years, while the inventory of unsold homes reached a record high, the most in a decade. About 230,000 Medicare recipients erroneously received reimbursement checks from the federal government totaling nearly $50 million. The head of the service says the money has to be returned. AT&T is suing to identify 25 data brokers who fraudulently posed as customers to get phone records of about 2,500 AT&T customers. Weyerhaeuser is combining with Canadian Domtar to create the largest fine paper company in North America with 14,000 employees. The deal is valued at $3.3 billion. Gateway Computer has received an unsolicited offer from eMachines to sell its retail operations for $450 million. IBM will pay $1.3 billion to buy ISS or Internet Security Systems. The company protects against data theft. The Wall Street Journal reports that Ford's chief executive recently spoke with the head of Nissan and Renault about a possible alliance. General Motors has also had similar discussions. Light sweet crude settled at $71.76 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange today, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 42 points, the Nasdaq down 15, the S&P 500 down 6. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Gramov.
time for another hour of Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
That's right, you're back on the show with the Bruce Birch Radio Program, trying to bring some sense to the fore here in the on the Head On Radio Network. Now, if you are new to our network, welcome. Glad to have you aboard. You know, the folks who are here on the horn, well, we're real folks. We're not any Hollywood types. None of us have ever been in a movie that I'm aware of. And none of us have ever written for a movie that I'm aware of. None of us have ever, and I'm not to say that writing or being in a movie is a bad thing, but we're not here to tell you how to live. We're here to hear from you about how you live liberally, progressively, in this fascist, under this fascist regime. Now, you know, I use that word every so often, not very often, as a matter of fact. But when I do, there's a reason for it, and the reason is that, you know, back in the 1930s, Hitler, oh God, he's bringing up Hitler again. Oh, I hate to do this, but you know, it's kind of imperative. Back in the 30s, Hitler organized and created a police state. He murdered millions of people, and as a result, he himself went to war with the rest of the world. Interesting story. Now, I just want to bring this to your attention because some of you are following what happened here in Greensboro, North Carolina on January 31st. Here in Greensboro, North Carolina on January 31st, the World Can't Wait of North Carolina held a Bush protest. That was the night of the State of the Union Address, if you remember correctly. That was the night of the State of the Union Address, a Tuesday night. There was a protest here in Greensboro that got about anywhere from 200 to 250 people at night on a school night in the middle of winter, who marched up and down downtown Greensboro, basically took over the downtown for about 2 hours, marched up and down the streets and banged pots and pans and called for George Bush to step down. That night, the police, who were present, decided that they were going to photograph and otherwise capture, using a video camera, the events of that night, as well as license plates from cars that were parked near the venue of this that. And it was a party. It was very raucous. It was very upbeat. It wasn't a screaming, ranting, raving, raising hell kind of thing. It was more of a let's get together and stand in solidarity against this regime. And if you remember that night, the Bush guy, the resident decider, he spoke from the podium and he talked about Iran and the folks who stayed behind, who didn't march up and down the streets and make a lots of noise, you know, who actually watched the speech. I stayed behind and watched the speech myself because I was supposed to count how many times he said freedom. I think I lost count at like 16. You know, freedom's on the march. They hate us because of our freedom. I mean, you know, it's. He has a stock list of things that he says, and he says it whenever he gets a chance. They hate us because we're free. No, they don't. They hate us because we're bombing the crap out of them. We're killing their sons and daughters. You know, we're trying to take over the Middle East in what is now being called the Freedom Agenda. Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Now, that night there was a number of things that happened. The policeman was photographing these license tags, and he was confronted by some of the demonstrators. He was wearing a plain clothes outfit, you know, the hiking boots and blue jeans, as far as anyone else knew, he was could have been a stalker. He could have been who knows what he could have been. Nobody knew for sure. They confronted him, and for their trouble, seven people were arrested that night. They became known as the Greensboro Seven. We've had them on the Head On Radio Network, a few of them, and done some interviews. And essentially, they were arrested for interfering with police business, even though the policeman never identified himself. They were arrested for assault on a police officer, basically by hurting his hand with their face, if you know what I mean. Eventually, the charges, the lawyers for these folks sat down with the police department, and guess what happened? They were conveniently told that as long as they kept their nose clean, no charges would be filed against them. So the Greensboro 7 minus one person who was carrying a concealed weapon. Yes, that's right. He was carrying a lock blade on his belt in a sheath. He was carrying a concealed weapon, a lock blade in his belt on a sheath. In a sheath. All of them got basically walked away. And now he still has to face some charges, but I'm not so sure about that. Now, well, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because the ACLU of North Carolina filed a Freedom of Information Act request to find out what happened with the so-called recorded video evidence. The city of Greensboro sent out a reply recently, of which I received a copy, and they filed this request on behalf of a number of people, including myself, because I was in attendance that night and I wanted to know what happened. So the ACLU of North Carolina received this this answer, and the answer was that that unless the information is needed for a federal investigation, it is destroyed after 30 days, which led me to believe one of two things. One is, well, they destroyed it, or two, well, they didn't. They didn't say that they destroyed it. They said unless it's needed, and apparently there's going to be a follow-up letter and possibly even a lawsuit. We'll talk to one of the attorneys about that at some point down the road. But essentially, ladies and gentlemen, if you've been following this story, where it stands right now is the people who were charged got off and never had to face court, and due in no small part to a huge outcry by the public here in Greensboro saying it was absolutely wrong that the cops treated them that way. There were, as I said, 200 to 250 people down there at that location that night. Anywhere from 50 to 100 wrote letters to the editors, basically completely refuting the city's version of the events and swayed the public opinion away from, oh, those dirty protesters, to people who were expressing their First Amendment. These were college professors. They were students. They were mothers. They were fathers. They were grandmothers. And there are people in wheelchairs. And, it was a true cross-section of society that came out to speak out against the crimes of the Bush administration. And they were able to sway the public opinion by writing letters to the editor, by having conversations. So never let it be said that the power of the public is not still in control. It's just a matter of when they decide to express it. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we'll get back to your phone calls. You are listening to the Bruce Birch radio program. I wanted to give you that little bit of an update on that. So if you want more information, let me know. Send me an email, and I'll send you what I got. After this break, I'll be right back.
Everywhere is freaks and herons, dykes and ferrets. Tell me where is sanity. Tax the rich, feed the poor. Tell there are no rich no more.
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. You all have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I've had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com. A place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
You and the gang are out cruising North Carolina highways, but they're fixing up a little stretch ahead there, so you merge politely, and then some nuts whiz by half in the bag. Wouldn't you just want to see them whipped? But hey, whip zones are dangerous. I mean, it could be shelled or crushed or spread all over the highway. Heck, they could be put behind bars or in a bag. Whew. Drive safely in work zones. Don't be a nut.
Stay alert, stay alive in North Carolina work zones.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
In the markets, I've seen you in the streets and at your political conventions, talking of your crusade, talking of your nation, and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and ma. I just got one question, and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb?
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Freer America. It's about 20 minutes past the hour right here on the Head On Radio Network. Let's go straight over to the phones. Our good friend Dave from Eureka, California, is joining us. Dave,
hey,
how you doing today, man?
Hey, my doorbell just rang. Let me see. Okay, come on. I think what I wanted to speak to was that the polls that were taken that asked, do you believe that our invasion and occupation of Iraq was a mistake? Because in a way, I wouldn't know how to answer that. I don't feel it was unintentional, if that's what they mean by a mistake. I don't feel that it was not their intent to invade Iraq and for their own purposes. And that is to say that it is extremely profitable to a small few. This war is a means by which massive amounts of our treasury is shifted into the pockets of Halliburton, Bechtel, Cheney, and a few of their colleagues. So,
totally agree with you. Totally agree.
So if they ask me the question, do I think they made a mistake? No, I think they did just what they planned to do, and they don't care how many people get harmed in the process. And that is very troubling. I'm one who comes to the conclusion that our government has fallen into the hands of some pretty hardcore criminals, psychopathic, certainly sociopathic. Harming others is not something that troubles them. Pocketing whatever they can get is what they want. People are there to be used. That's what we've got running our country, and it's frightful, but I think we have to see reality for what it is to be able to deal with it.
I totally agree, and I would even dovetail your comments with the reality that it seems like to me they want to destroy government. They want to make it so unwieldy and unusable that people would turn away from it and it would die a miserable death. I think that's also part of their strategy as well.
Shrink it down to a point where we can bring it in the bathtub and drown it. They certainly would like to get rid of everything that is, say, housing subsidies for the poor. They would like to get rid of welfare. They would like to get rid of anything that's there to protect the working person or the poor from starvation and disaster. They don't care about that. They want all that money for themselves. And so, yeah, they say to us, the guy working as the janitor at the McDonald's, set aside some of your money so that you can purchase a retirement plan when you're too old to work anymore. Well, how's that going to work? These guys that are up there, they're multi-$1 million a year, they'll buy whatever kind of retirement plan they want, and they don't even need one. They'll have enough money in the bank. But asked out of the working, very poor, minimum wage worker to do that. But that's for trying to sell that plan to us, you know. It's ridiculous. Psychopaths.
They absolutely are. They absolutely are. They have no... And it seems like to me that George, he loves the little stories about he's a sick man. He's a very sick man. And as a result, what's happened in the country, you know, and as I've mentioned this before, but I'll say it again, you know, we look at what's happened with all the war crimes that have happened over there. Well, if the leader of the free world, the supposedly free world, if the leader of the country that is doing the invading, the commander-in-chief himself doesn't follow the law, why would anyone underneath him want to?
You know, and I would have to think that as soldiers and Marines become more and more aware of what's in the heart of this government, bizarre behavior would become the norm. They're a part of something very, very wrong and unhealthy. And as they become aware of that, what do? You know, say, I do not want to be a part. Huh?
Well, a lot of them are standing up, and you know, of course, it's not the media isn't covering it as much as the blogosphere on the internet is. But a lot of them have stood up and said, "I'm not going back." You know, I refuse to report for duty, and they're getting arrested and they're being thrown in the brig. Now, in Vietnam, it's my understanding, and I need to read up on this a little bit. But I've had a number of callers who were either in Vietnam or who were around at the time, who said that the tide of that war turned when it looked like that the soldiers themselves refused to fight, even in the bush. they would go out on patrol a lot. You know, I had a caller on once who told me that when he went out on patrol there when they were in Vietnam, a lot of times, or maybe it wasn't a caller, it was another person I had a conversation with. Anyway, point being is that they would get on patrol, get right beyond the perimeter, and basically go and hide in a bush all day and smoke pot.
So, well, you know, the option for the active...
Yeah, and I'm not saying that all the soldiers did that, but what I am saying is that enough of them refused to participate in their own way in that war. And I can't help but think that a lot of them, you know, I interviewed a couple of Iraqi war veterans the first day I did this daily show, and they both, you know, both of them agreed with me that, you know, the morale of the troops over there is probably the lowest that it's ever been, and this was back in June. You know, the things the Army used to do that military contractors are now doing. And, you know, the Army is having to provide the security for these military contractors who are making, you know, maybe 10 times as much as what the Army is making, the Army, or maybe 5 times as much as what the Army guy is making every year. You know, so, and it's really bred a lot of resentment and discontent within our ranks. And now he says that they're going to recall these inactive Marine reservists. It's not looking good.
No. I recall, well, it's been several months ago now, that Condoleezza was over there talking to the troops in Iraq, and she was saying, always remember, we did not bring this war to them. They brought this to us. And clearly trying to convince them that they attacked us on 9/11. But I think as more and more people figure out that's not true. And what are we doing here? Killing these people. They did not harm us. Why am I doing this? You know, if you or I were there, what do we do? Well, you can't say, I want no longer to be a part of that. Put me on the next yellow cab out of here, because that ain't going to happen. You're there, and they've got control of you until such time as you, for their reasons, are on a plane out of there.
Yeah, that tired old lie, and I talked about it some yesterday. I covered some of the deception that the right wing has heaped upon us in this whole conflict. And the biggest deception of all is that somehow or another 9/11 is linked to the war on terror.
That's what they want to get the soldiers to believe.
Yeah. Well, and the soldiers do believe it. A lot of them do believe it. The problem is that, you know, it's not true. it's a bald-faced lie.
And some of them figure that out. Some of them must get letters from home, or some of them must talk to soldiers there that know the truth, and so that must be leaking out around them.
I'm sure it is. I'm absolutely sure it is. I mean, it is absolutely crazy to think that because of what happened on 9/11, you know, that Iraq all of a sudden, you know, it was never, it's just, the connection isn't there, even though they keep trying to push it forward. Now, Bush said Monday that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, and quickly followed that up with, you know, the hedging remark, which is, but you have to understand, blah, 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 you know, and terrorism is being bred there. And then he went on to say something that really surprised me, Dave. He said, what they need is hope, and that's what we're trying to bring them, is hope.
Well, that
and I thought to myself, I've never seen hope loaded into the barrel of a gun. Have you?
I certainly haven't seen winning the hearts and minds of any place loaded into the, you know, muzzle of a machine gun or a flamethrower or grenades or whatever. No, I think we are creating what they call terrorists, what I call defenders of their country. People that are saying, what are you doing here in our country? Get out. And that's what we label now. Our government labels as terrorists or insurgents. They're not real people there resenting us occupying their country and taking over their oil interests and such.
Back in 1775, they were known as patriots here.
Yeah. Well, we're a part of something truly dreadful, and the people need to know it, and they need to look at that reality. We don't want to believe it. How could my wonderful country do such a terrible thing? And I think that inhibits most of us from addressing reality, but it is there, and we got to look through all of our happiness and patriotism and say, this time we are as out of line as you can get, and we got to get the people that are doing this to them and to this country. I love your program, Bruce.
Thank you. Thank you, David. I really appreciate that. And, you know, that's a tall compliment. And, you know, we do what we can.
Well, I do appreciate that. I will be a regular listener and a caller whenever I can help feel I can share something that needs to be said.
Well, I always look forward to our conversations because you always bring something to the table that's absolutely worth bringing to the fore. So you know, I do appreciate your call, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you so much. It's really ugly, and I'm here to say that and explain it as best I can. It's something dreadful we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Thank you, dear friend.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay. That's our good friend Dave from Eureka, California, who called in to talk about the insanity and the criminal actions that are going on in Iraq. And, you know, it really is, it's just, you know, I don't like to be all negative. I don't. I did a show a few weeks ago about peace and what it takes to bring about a change in our society so that we can have peace, lasting peace. But as long as there is oppression in the world, and as long as people are going hungry, and as long as there are more that want than those that don't want, there will be violence and there will be war. And those that have will always serve to protect what they have, and those that don't have will always be scraping to try to get some of it. That's the reality. So unless there is a great systemic change, we will always be faced with war of some sort. The point of the matter is that in this so-called democracy, how long will we put up with the haves attacking the have-nots? I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into the last half hour of the show. You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Freer America, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you hear them talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. At Bush's press conference on Monday, he made two things clear. First, there's no way he's getting us out of Iraq. We're not leaving so long as I'm the president, he said point blank. As part of his ever-changing justification for being there, he did mention the dirty little three-letter word oil, interestingly enough. I guess he thinks it's okay to refer to Iraq's vast oil supplies now, 3.5 years after launching the war, whereas it would have been too crass to mention them before. But it makes little sense to suggest that the Iraqis would hand over their oil to Al-Qaeda, which is blowing up innocent people. If the U.S. leaves, the Iraqis are more likely to go after Al-Qaeda, not less. That likelihood doesn't fit into Bush's script, though. But attacking Iran does, and that was the second ominous noise that Bush made on Monday. Asked about Tehran's influence, Bush responded, "The final history in the region has yet to be written." And he warned a couple of times of the danger of a nuclear-armed Iran. Bush believes that he himself is writing the final history of the region, or at least transcribing God's wishes for it, and his transcription machine is an F-16. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 36 minutes past the hour. We're rapidly wrapping up, getting into the last half hour of the show. If you want to get in on the show and join the conversation, we can talk about whatever you feel like you need to get off your chest. 1-877-443-2366. That's the number. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. Got a lot of different things. Now that I've got some open lines, I wanted to get over to another story here that's that I read earlier that just blows my mind. You know, again, this is a little pre story for prayer meeting with Bob Kincaid tonight. It's Wednesday, and that's Head On Radio Network's prayer meeting edition with Bob. He's going to be on tonight. Head On with Bob Kincaid. Catholic sister Helen Prejean, perhaps, author of Dead Man Walking and a longtime social activist, was uninvited as the keynote speaker at the Diocese of Duluth Education Dinner in October. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important because, again, it talks about the effect of politics on religion and religion on politics. The reality is, she signed an August 3rd New York Times advertisement for World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime, that basically called for Bush to step down. The World Can't Wait organizers are sponsoring a mass day of protest against the Bush administration on October the 5th. Prejean, 67, is apparently right now on a three-month sabbatical for renewal in writing. But she said that the ad properly criticizes Bush's reckless pursuit of war in Iraq, which has helped to destabilize the Middle East, his approval of torture, his zealous promotion of imprisonment and executions, and his fiscal policies, which make the wealthy people more wealthy and the poor people poorer. And so she has been uninvited because of her political feelings. She said, she wrote on her website, quote, "I signed the ad because as a follower of the way of Jesus and a U.S. citizen, I cannot stand by passively and silently as I witness my government wage such grievous oppression and violence. For me personally, it would be sinful not to raise my voice publicly in opposition to the life-destructive policies and practices of the Bush administration." She also, coincidentally, is against abortion because of her belief that killing, all killing, war, executions, killing of the old and demented, the killing of the children, unborn and born, is wrong. So there you go. I just wanted to bring that to your attention because it is kind of interesting how someone's political expression can cause such problems within the church. The church really can't handle much self-criticism. It can't handle much criticism at all for such a strong organization worldwide. You know, 80%, I read somewhere, maybe 70 to 80% of people in the United States believe in a God of some kind. And, you know, just under 50% are religious about it. They perform actions such as going to church on Sunday or Saturday or whatever. And, you know, so there's that. The one thing, though, the one question I would have for churches, though, if what you're doing is so good and so amazing and you're able to win souls to Christ, why then is it such an imperative thing to have prayer in school? Don't they do that in church? And if they can do that, if they do that in church, and you want them to do it in school, well then why don't you let them bring some Charles Darwin books, some biology books, I don't know, physics, maybe some of that stuff that people have to rely on, over to the church and do a classroom study period. Why not do that? Why? Well, because it's secular. We can't do that, right? Well, then what? The opposite should hold true as well. If the churches aren't willing to allow kids to do their homework or allow them to bring their books to Sunday school class and study, the theory of evolution, then perhaps the churches themselves need to back off about having prayer in school. Because the reality of that situation is that, it's just bad. Anyway, okay, moving right along. Now, interestingly enough, apparently out of Iran this afternoon, there is a claim that Iran has made a nuclear breakthrough. And they're claiming that they will soon announce an atomic breakthrough. The semi-official Mayer News Service reported today, day after the country responded to an offer aimed at resolving a nuclear standoff. The great scientific achievement is the fruit of a long-term research project. It will be formally announced by a top official. The announcement will highlight Iran's mastery of different areas in nuclear science and will reinforce Iran's position as a nuclear country. Amid a fanfare of publicity, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad announced in April that Iran had successfully enriched uranium to 3.5% and mastered the nuclear fuel cycle. The United States is presently suspecting Iran of using a civilian nuclear program to secretly develop atomic weapons, but Tehran says it only wants to produce electricity. Now, the UN Security Council has given Iran until August the 31st to halt enrichment and reprocessing activities or face possible sanctions. Iran yesterday responded to an offer from six world powers of negotiations on trade, technology, and security benefits if Iran freezes its strategic nuclear fuel work. Iran? Now, I wonder if there's anyone out there who believes, that Iran should not have a nuclear weapon, or Iran shouldn't develop nuclear technology. I'm sure there's a lot of people, and a lot of people are really scared about this. When in fact, John Fox and I did some research on Fourth Estate Radio and went back and looked at some of these treaties and some of these rules surrounding Iran, and you know what? The reality is that they're bunk. All of this is a war of words. Iran is officially allowed to develop nuclear technology. But they're scared to do so, and the UN right now is being the United States lapdog. in allowing John Bolton to bully them into creating sanctions. I, what scares me is not Iran. What scares me is North Korea. That dude is a wacko, for sure. We're going to take a break. And, of course, now I don't want to offend all of you wackos out there, but the guy's a wacko. And as I hear the Jimi Hendrix music coming up, you are listening to the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Freer America. We'll be back to wrap up the show right after this.
Hanging out of my bed. You messing with my life, so I bought my lid. Even messing with my children. And you're screaming at my wife. Get off of my bed. If you want to get out of here alive.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed.
And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything.
Yeah.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real, but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
Right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and right after the top of the hour, after our Quality News Network feed, the news there, you'll hear our good friend Bob Kincaid back in the saddle again to do his prayer edition of the Head On with Bob Kincaid show. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. I'm sure you'll really enjoy it. He always puts on a fantastic show. Interesting story. I always start them out that way, don't I? A deported man, Duarnes Perez, became an American citizen when he was 15, but he didn't find out until after he had been deported and then jailed for trying to get back into the country. He was facing his second deportation hearing when he learned he was already a U.S. citizen. And even then, federal prosecutors fought to keep him in custody. Last week, a federal judge scolded the prosecutors for their mistake. U.S. District Judge Lawrence Kahn wrote, quote, "In effect, the government is arguing that an innocent man who was wrongly convicted should not be released from the custody of the United States." Makes a lot of sense. It's opposite world, right? Why not? Let's just hold him for a while. He ruled later that Perez should never have been deported. The case has gotten the attention of immigration observers who call it a striking example of the gaps in an overworked immigration system. Perez became a citizen when his mother was naturalized in 1988, but apparently wasn't aware of it. His lawyer, J. Jeffrey Weisenfeld of New York, declined to release details other than to say that Perez, now in his early 30s, remains in the United States. He was deported to the Dominican Republic in 1994 after a drug conviction. In 2000, he was caught trying to re-enter the United States from Canada, but he wasn't informed he was a citizen until the spring of 2004 after serving 3.5 years in prison for that 2000 arrest. Can you say lawsuit? False arrest? Did that sound like Barney? I hope so. You know, just out of the story, the bin. This is the weird story bin time. This is out of the. It blows my mind. It's an. Because he, as a citizen, is forced to prove his citizenship, rather than the Office of Immigrant Citizen and U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Doing the research to find out whether or not he's an actual citizen, even though he didn't even believe he was. Just crazy, crazy. All right. Another story out of the crazy bin, the wacko bin, the bin of iniquity. Striptease send-offs at funerals may become a thing of the past in East China. After five people were arrested for organizing the intimate farewells. All right. All of my life, ladies and gentlemen, I've thought of China as being this very uptight communist place where everybody was very morose and dour. They're having striptease funerals in China. Oh, my God. Apparently, police swooped down last week after two groups of strippers gave obscene performances at a farmer's funeral in Donghai. Oh, my God. In Donghai County, Jiangsu Province. The disrobing served a higher purpose, the report noted. Quote, "Striptease used to be a common practice at funerals in Donghai's rural areas to allure viewers. Local villagers believe that the more people who attend the funeral, the more the dead person is honored." Or the tips are higher. Wealthy families often employed two troops of performers to attract a crowd. 200 apparently showed up at last week's funeral. Five strippers were detained, and local officials issued notices concerning funeral management. Now village officials must submit plans for funerals within 12 hours after a villager dies. And residents can report funeral misdeeds on a hotline number. Oh, my goodness. And here I thought the Chinese were uptight. They're having striptease funerals, folks. Oh, my God, that's just too much. Oh, well, now, another story out of the crazy bin here to top off the afternoon for you. Israeli police tailing a suspected senior underworld figure accidentally crashed into his vehicle. This was in Jerusalem. Police put the suspected criminal under 24-hour surveillance a month ago, and the man knew he was being followed. But Tuesday, a police officer fell asleep at the wheel of his car and crashed into the man's vehicle in the southern city of Ashkelon, slightly injuring him. Ashkelon police could not be reached by Reuters, but they told the newspaper an accident involving a police car and a Jeep occurred in the city on Tuesday. Just goes to show you, if you're going to do a 24-hour surveillance, you need to cycle the cops out every so often so they can get some rest, right? Right. Okay, now, looks like we're heading out to the end of the program. I'd like to thank our good friend Zach Rebich and Agnes Kincaid for producing and being behind the board this afternoon. Thank you both for doing such a smashing job. I want to thank our good friend John Fox for being the announcer of this radio program and for being the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network by remote from Sydney, Australia. Also want to thank our good friend Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services of Tallahassee, Florida, for being our IT professional here at the Head On Radio Network. To our good friend Gene, who joined us today via telephone from the left coast, thank you so much for being our chief news blogger and Head On Radio news ninja.
Hiya!
I also want to thank Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for managing the stream and the archives of this show and all of the shows on the Head On Radio Network over at whiterosesociety.org. Go check him out. Please do go check him out. And I also want to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. And to all the mods in the chat room, you guys are doing a fantastic job, too. We really appreciate it. And last but not least, thank you, listener, for joining me for another edition of the Bruce Birch radio program. And remember, it's your democracy too, and it's not a spectator sport. I'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon right here on the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned for Bob Kincaid up next. I'll be seeing you tomorrow.
We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution, prison doors swung open, mothers hugged their sons, the Liberty Bell was